Okay, I hope you don't mind. I'm gonna turn off my camera. And the reason I'm gonna do that is because I don't wanna look at my face while I'm talking. I can't stand it. There's something about that that gives me the creeps. So I'm gonna turn it off. I'm Helena. I'm an alcoholic. Oh yeah, that's much better. I'm an addict, I'm an alcoholic. I'm grateful that I'm among the living today. Phew. And it's good to be in a meeting. It's really, really good to be in a meeting. You know, I woke up this morning. I knew I had to set an alarm because now that I'm a retired lady, it's very seldom that I'm up at this time unless I've been up all night. And I have pulled a couple of all-nighters in, you know, since the pandemic. Matter of fact, my whole sleep schedule is all over the place. But there's nothing about me in the last year and a half that was the same as it was before, except for I'm still alive and breathing. Everything, my whole world has turned upside down. And I guess everybody else's has as well. You know, it's interesting because Tus Noir is my favorite group, but when I speak at Tus Noir, I'm always the most nervous to speak here as opposed to anywhere else. I don't know what's up with that, but I don't have to know the answer to everything. And that's good because if I think I know the answer to everything, I think I'll have a problem then because there's always more to learn and I'm learning more and more about myself every day. Okay, everybody, there's some people on here that really don't know my story, so I'll just touch on a little bit. You know, I think it's way more important for me to talk about Helena today as opposed to Helena yesterday, because you wouldn't like Helena from yesterday. Not that you may not like me today, because some days I don't like me, but that's okay. I might not like me some days, but I love me every day. I'll put it like that. Daria always tells me when I'm speaking and I'm feeling nervous, just imagine everybody in the audience naked. So that kind of works because I'm looking at y'all. I'm like, maybe. I don't know, man. No, that was a joke. But yeah, so let me get serious now. All right. Thanks, everybody, for being here this morning. I am nervous. And let's see. I'm Helena. I'm from New York. I am 70 years old. I'm sober 29 years. My sober date is June 8th, 1992. It wasn't my first sober date. My first sober date was June 10th, 1985. So there was a 2-day relapse somewhere in there in 92. I kind of lost my mind there for a minute. But, you know, I'm ever so grateful that that relapse wasn't longer than the 2 days, but I became totally unhinged. You know, I was still making meetings, still doing service. At that time, I was married. And my house became people, places, and things. You know, my husband had started using. It was around the house. So it didn't take long for me to pick it up. You know, but like I said, that was the 2 days. And hopefully I don't have to relive anything even remotely close to that. But then again, my husband is long dead. And it's interesting because we were married twice, once in recovery and once out of recovery. So poor thing. He's been dead a long time now. We did split up and he remarried. He remarried, and it's interesting because we became better friends after he remarried, and I even became friends with his wife. you know, he died. He died from colon cancer. And it was such a shock to me because I always thought that I'd be long dead, you know, way before him. And he suffered. And it was still hard to bear to see him go in that painful kind of way, because it just like snuck up on him like right away, you know. And he didn't really talk to me about it. But his wife called me, and you know, she was concerned. She was like, listen, you know, can you talk to him? The toilet is full of blood. You know, so I'm like, oh. I knew that sounded like a horrible sign to me, because back in the 80s, when I would hear somebody went to the bathroom, a male, and the toilet was full of blood, that was usually a sign of AIDS. So I knew he didn't have AIDS. But I suspected colon cancer, and that's what it was, you know. So I felt, you know, really, 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 really horrible, because even though I had been through a lot, you know, we were always friends on some kind of level since we were like in our 20s, you know. So to see him go in that horrible way in such a quick fact, space of time was horrifying to see. But I've seen many people die over the years. By the way, let me get this piece out of the way. Me, myself, have been HIV positive for 32 years. And every day I'm amazed I'm still here. Every night I still go to sleep and wonder if I'm going to get up the next day. You know, especially since I'm 70. I never thought I was going to be no goddamn 70 years of age. And I never wanted to be 70 years of age. You know, it's hard for me to imagine even living this long. I'm sorry, I'm stumbling a lot, but I have coffee and I haven't drank it yet. I'm still sitting here, but I'm going to start. At least you won't see me sucking it down. So that's a good thing. But it's amazing too that I only drink one cup of coffee. Picture that, the whole day, only one cup, and sometimes not the whole cup. So back to where I was at. I guess because I know I'm being recorded now. Now I'm like, you know, some of the wind kind of left my body. But back to the HIV thing. Yeah. So And being retired, you know, I never thought I would actually live long enough to be retired. I thought I'd be dead in a year when they gave me that diagnosis. You know, they gave me that diagnosis in 1989, and they told me I would only live a year. But you know, but even then, you know, when I went to get tested, the only thing that was really bothering me was I kept getting earaches. You know, I kept getting these earaches. And one of the girls I was working with that was also in recovery, she had tested positive. You know, and since she did it, I said, well, I might as well do it too, because I followed her all around. She was in recovery. She was in recovery before me. So we were pretty good friends. So basically, I kind of watched what she did, and I kind of did what she did, you know. So I was like, damn, she don't seem like she's sick. But I knew I had shot a lot of dope in my days, you know, and I knew that I was totally, I guess I could use the word promiscuous. It sounds like such an icky kind of word. But, you know, I never looked at that like no big thing, you know, because when I was coming up, and, you know, as a kid and as a teenager, I was always around like my male cousins. You know, they were the ones that taught me how to fight, how to protect myself on a low grade martial arts level, you know, and I kind of did what they kind of did. And they always had like cute girlfriends. They were very good looking men. We're kids. We were kids then. So I never had like what I hear a lot of you ladies have. And sometimes I feel less than I can say that, You know, because I never knew how to be like a dainty lady. Even the only thing dainty about me is I like dolls, and I like a lot of them. You know, and I got a lot of them too. You know, I have a doll in here that's older than most of you. And yeah, but everything else was about playing marbles, playing basketball, you know, handball, and fights, and just a bunch of craziness. Even as a teenager, I got into a gang for a while, because that was kind of like the thing to do. I think the only thing that really saved me in those days, you know, I don't know if it was a higher power. I don't know none of that, because I don't. I can say what Marcia always says, you know, I'm an agnostic because I just don't know. And I don't know either. I don't know. All I know is that the things I went through, I think I was supposed to go through every single thing that I went through. Because if I missed one step, I might have not been here today. You know, that's what I believe. You know, I believe that everything I went through was a lesson. You know, I went through the drinking stage, but I was never no real, so to speak, strong-ass drinker. You know, I hear some of the ladies talk about, oh, you know, I could drink the men under the table. Well, shit, that ain't part of my story. You know, because I have a drink, but there was always something else there. You know, I can remember sniffing carbona and glue and all this stuff early on, because I never could just flat out drink. I didn't like to feel like I was out of control, and it always hit my stomach. I wasn't a throw up person, you know, but I never could just plain drink. So it's funny, because when I got to AA, I wonder if that was one of my main qualifications. I was afraid to speak because I knew I didn't have a strong alcohol story, and I was making mostly AA meetings, you know. But at that time, it was kind of frowned upon if you brought drugs into your story. And but anyway, so that's neither here nor there. So I'm just trying to get back to the point where I was talking about, you know, the earlier time. So so I never learned how to be like a lady. Always had that edge to me, and I think that edge is what I needed to survive in that particular time. You know, I had no siblings at that time. I didn't have siblings later, but not at that time, the crucial early days, you know. But I did have other things. You know, I had hobbies. I learned how to draw early on by watching other people draw. You know, my mom, she always had folks over, folks from all over, all different types of ethnic backgrounds, and they brought their talents with them. And I followed them, and I did everything they did. You know, I watched them play cards. I watched them, how they learned to, you know, fold cards. I watched how they had little switchblades. I would watch them flick it out. I'm like, well, I can't wait to get a switchblade. Yeah, I watched them smoke cigarettes. I said, you know what? When I grow up, I'm not going to drink, but I'm going to smoke cigarettes. You know, because there was something about the drinking. And I had an aunt, a younger aunt, and I can look back at her and say that she was definitely of the alcoholic variety, because they always say nobody can never say, you can't say somebody's an alcoholic, they have to be the one to say it, you know. But she would drink, and she would end up wetting herself, you know. She would be like a fairy in the beginning and an ogre, you know, towards the end. She would curse you out, you know. And I was like, wow. I watched her one day, we were in the street. And she had a daughter and a son, and her daughter was standing in the corner crying. So something, even I was really young, I knew there was something wrong about that. You know, there was something shameful like about that. So I don't know if that was one of the things that kind of kept me away from the heavy drinking thing. I don't know. And guess what? I don't have to know, because here it is years later. And I'm just trying to give you a little detail because I realize when I do speak, I never talk a lot about, the earlier days. That kind of just came about. But yeah, so the other things that saved me is that I like to write. I learned how to read and write before I even got to actually kindergarten. So by the time I got to school, I was kind of like the teacher's pet, and nobody likes the teacher's pet. Even back then, nobody liked the teacher's pet. But I can remember I had got into an incident with a little boy. He kept picking at me, kept picking, pick, pick, pick. And one day I just picked up a pencil and stuck it in his ear. And I mean, way in his ear too. I never had no problems on him again. Even though he kind of bothered me after, and just behind that one little incident, I was doomed to be a troubled kid. And I guess the part that troubled the teacher and troubled my parents is because I kept digging the damn pencil in his ear. So there was maybe if I had just took the pencil and just stuck it towards the tip, but because I kept digging, and I had to be evaluated for that. I had to be evaluated, and there was a lot of other instances where I was kind of like turned into this violent, angry little girl. I was, well, I guess you wouldn't call it mandated, but I was kind of sequestered. Maybe that's a nice word. I don't know. But yeah, as a young kid, they evaluated me like I was a grown ass person to find out what was wrong with me. They said that I was scholastically very smart. They tested me. I had all kind of tests done on me. And they say, "Oh, she's smart. Her IQ is 160." So I don't know. I didn't know what that meant. I just know that I like to read. I like to write. I was very good in math, and I like to draw. I could sing a little. I learned how to play the piano a little bit. Not no Stevie Wonder or anything like that, but. It's like every seemed like everything I picked up, I could do, and it was kind of easy for me. So those are the things I think that kind of protected me from the other side of me that was this, this angry little girl, and I never really got to really process that anger and stuff, even though, I had went to psychiatrists in those days. I can remember my mom taking me to a therapist, and they would just, ask me questions. I answer the questions, and that was it. As far as me like being punished, I think I got beaten maybe twice, and my mom says, "Well, there's no sense beating you because you don't cry. The best thing I could do is punish you." I hated to be on punishment, and I was on punishment a lot, a lot. But that's okay. I look back at my mom because I can remember I was kind of molested. No, kind of molested. I was molested, and I can remember telling my mom about it. One of her neighbors, his son, had accosted me, and I told my mom, and my mom was so upset. I can remember her talking on the telephone to the neighbor, and I heard a lot of screaming and this and that. And then I don't know if I blacked out as a kid, in a trauma co sort of sense, but I can't remember nothing being done after that. I can't remember nothing being done, but that kind of told me I'm not telling my mother nothing no more. I'm gonna have to learn to protect myself. And that's when my male cousins came in because I realized I needed to be able to protect myself. So, no man or nobody could do that to me again or anything remotely like it. So I've always been, I never had trouble out of men beating on me or doing anything horrible to me unless I allowed it, and I felt pretty proud that I knew how to protect myself. I can remember one guy, I had went with him for years. This was early on in the drugging days. So I'd say I was about maybe, I don't know, about 24, And he punched me in my ear. My ear is still not right today. My ear is still kind of like off. I didn't do anything, but I was light then. I think I weighed maybe about 110, 120. But I remember I flew. I didn't do anything. I didn't even cry. I was just like so stunned. And I felt like it went through the back of my brain. But that evening, I was cooking and I walked up behind him and I hit him as hard as I could with a frying pan. And not one of them little cheapy ones either, one of those black cast iron ones, you know. And I never had no more problems out of him. But it's interesting because I didn't leave him. So there was something a little wrong with that. And that was my apartment his ass was in, you know, but I didn't leave him. And a main part of that is because that same guy taught me how to work the street, how to make money illegally in the street. And I needed that because by that time I was into heavy heroin addiction and I needed to make money. And I told myself, no matter what you do, you're not selling your ass on the street. You don't know how to make money. You're a whiz with numbers, you know. So I got deeply into like forgery and a whole lot of other things. And not proud to talk about that, but you know, it's just so many things I'm not proud to talk about or feel easy talking about. But then I realized those are the things I need to talk about. You know, those are the things I need to process and get out of the way. I don't know that I'm going to talk about them in so many different audiences. And guess what? I don't have to. I just have to talk in a general way. So I don't know how general this is because I'm listening to this and I'm like, this shit don't sound general, Mina. This sounds very ungeneral, but so where do I go from here? What do I tell you now? All I can tell you now is that, you know, I did end up in jail, no long term, did end up arrested several times, you know, and by the time I got to recovery, I was pretty much beat. I had had several suicide attempts by that time. And I mean, horrific ones too. I swallowed a couple of pills. I was swallowing hypodermic needles, okay? I wanted to die, but yet I was too vain to jump off the roof or jump off the platform or, you know, the train platform. Although I can remember one day I had somebody talked me into getting some speed. I never was a speedy person. I like kind of downheads, even though I kind of got into the cocaine thing, shot a bunch of that. And then I was like, nah, that's not for me. But anyway, so somebody had told me about this speed. So I said, oh, let me try that. I tried speed. I ended up sitting on the platform at the edge of the platform, just sitting there like it was like I was sitting on the beach with my legs hanging over. I'm like, okay, then no, we ain't doing no more speed, you know, so I don't know what that could have been, a suicide attempt. I'm not going to say it should have been. I'm going to say it could have been. But so those kind of things. So by the time I got to the rooms, I was done. I was done, you know. I realized it wasn't about the street anymore. I had ended up getting into a scuffle with this woman, and I had to cut her throat. I know that sounds awful, but I was kind of like a attack first. She didn't die, at least by me, she didn't die, you know. But I heard later that she had an infection and she did die. So I always felt a little guilty for that, you know, because maybe had that not happened, maybe that might have not happened to her, you know. But again, protecting myself. And, you know, I was also directly responsible for someone getting killed because they were trying to protect me. So I feel like I walk around with blood on my hands, you know, but I tried to process that out. And how I do that today is both of those people are not here today. But I try to be the best person I could be today, you know. And yes, I do still have a switchblade. Yes, I do. I don't have a pistol. I wouldn't mind having one with all the shit that's going around here where I live. It's a mess. It's a mess. But I'm glad I have a roof over my head, you know, and I'm glad that that I'm alive. I know it's 32 past the hour, so it's getting a little close to where I should be shutting the hell up. To me, at least it feels like that. Yeah, so that's some of the dark, ugly stuff I haven't told you about. I always wonder, what am I going to talk to them about? You know, then I'm like, don't focus on that. Stay in the now, stay in the now. You know, but so yeah, so those are some of the things I went through. But let me tell you about some of the good stuff, and then I'll shut the hell up. Okay, so like I told you, HIV positive for the 32 years. It took me 8 years before I decided I was going to go to college. Okay, y'all have been telling me for so long, you're brilliant, go to school. So I was like, okay, I gotta go to school. But in the back of me was like, yeah, but you're gonna die. Yeah, but you're gonna die. I was saying this 8 years after they told me the first year. So I'm like, okay, this is getting a little old now, you know, because I allowed that particular description of myself, that health diagnosis, to kind of like keep me from doing things that maybe I should at least try. You know, okay, I might die at the end of today, but at least try to do something you a dream of yours or something you want to do. At least try. If you fail, or not even fail, if you don't get to do it, but at least you will have tried. You know, so that finally sunk in, and I went to a junior college, and then I went for my associates. I got my bachelor's. So then after that, I came out of there with honors. The only one that was shocked was me. Everybody was, oh, we knew you could have did that. We knew that all along, you know, all this and all that. I'm like, oh, yeah, shut the fuck up. Yeah. But I felt good. I felt better about graduating with my bachelor's as more than when I got my master's. I don't know. Probably because it was the first, you know, when the first is always the best to me. But yeah, so I was able to do that. I was able to, you know, go and get my master's at a really good university, Yeshiva University in New York. And I did amazingly well. I mean, amazingly well. You know, both schools, I came out, you know, top of my class. So that was good for me to do, because that helped with the self-esteem part, you know. That helped because I really wanted to do something to help others. I had a career by that time. You know, I was working as an administrator in health and hospitals. So I worked there for like 13 years. So I had a career with that, you know, but I still wanted to go to school. I still wanted to do other things. So I was working at that, going to school full time, and I was doing a lot of stuff. I was starting to feel a little tired, but these are things that I felt like I had to hurry up and do, because I'm still dying today. You know, I got the virus. Everybody was like, oh, we're so tired of hearing about that virus. You're still here. You know, and even my family, you know, I had a daughter. You know, my daughter was very proud of me. My family was pretty proud of me. So all I had to do was me be proud of me. You know, me be proud of me. So I got into service. You know, I did service. I did anything you told me to do. I got to travel also. You know, I discovered cruises, and that became almost like another addiction. But that's okay, because that got me over to the other side of the world to see Spain, you know, to see Greece, to see Paris. But I went on a convention, Narcotics Anonymous convention in Paris in 95, and that was amazing. It was amazing. So I got to other countries, and I got to travel, and so I appreciate that. Matter of fact, I got a cruise book for next year. How about that? Tell me recovery ain't good. But yeah. So I began to have fun. I began to do things. I began to believe in myself. Not Some days I'm like, Helena, you're so full of shit. Get your ass up and do this and do that. You can do this, you can do that. So I always try to push myself a little bit beyond the limit. But then there's some times where I feel stuck. I'm like, oh my God, I don't feel like doing shit today. And I'm definitely not going to that meeting because I don't want to hear nobody's fucking pain. I don't want to hear about nobody's problem and shit. I just want to watch TV all day with the covers over my head. You know, but usually when that happens, it's not everybody else. It's totally me. There's something that's going on that that I feel I have no control over, or I'm at wit's end. I'm still undecisive, and just crazed. You know. So here we are today, many years later, on the other side of the spectrum. You know, I did get to work as a social worker for 5 years. You know, I got sick on the job, actually. I got sick. I kind of burnt out real quick, you know. So I had to come out of there on disability. And then after a while, I just said, well, I'm not going back. I need to retire, you know, and that's what I did. So part of me was like, damn, you went to grad school for all of that to only work as a short time, but I had clients and I learned to work with them because I am a licensed social worker. I actually have a fucking license, fix that shit. But they had to get through my background, you know, my criminal background, just to allow me to have the license. So that means I had to go down and I had to get it squashed and this and that. And it took me a year to get that squashed, actually. You know, I had to actually write to a congressman to get the New York justice system to squash my records. You know, and to me, part of that is disgraceful, but part of me is glad that I was able to do that. You know, that I was in a position to even want to do it, you know? So anyway, I'm bouncing all over the place like a fucking stale ball, but I'm doing the best I can, folks. You know, I'm a little shaky today. You know, I bought my, well, I didn't bring it into the world, but my great granddaughter, I've shared a lot on the post, the kitchen post, and a couple of posts, her pictures. She struggled coming into the world, you know, with a cord wrapped around her neck, you know, and a head at they said a strange angle. And as soon as I heard that strange angle, I'm like, what do you mean strange? Was her head twisted all around like in The Exorcist? You know, so I'm like, but no, but she got here. However she got here, she got here. But she's not having the best of times, you know. Yesterday they were gonna release her, but they didn't release her because she's not getting the nutrients from her mom's breast like she should be getting. So they still want to keep her on the tubes a couple of days and this and that. She seems to be better. The pictures I've seen, you know, she seems a little stronger. But I'm concerned about that. And I guess it's a matter of concern. I guess that'll work itself out, you know. And at least she's here. So we'll see where it goes. It's a day at a time. Her name is Serenity Rose. And so that's pretty cool. So I'll get to see her. Hopefully next month. I'm going to a resort next month. Picture that. Helena will be at a resort in Florida. Picture that. I've never been in a resort, though. But I really need a day away, a couple of days away, because I've been sitting here in still New York and haven't even gotten to the beach. Wednesday is my beach day, but every Wednesday it's even raining. Or I got some other thing to do. But yes, I haven't done anything really fun. But what I have done is I've showed up at meetings. I haven't missed a meeting during this whole pandemic. There's not been a day that hasn't been to some kind of meeting. You know, and I always get what I need to hear. You know, I get a message. I get to meet people. I'm so happy that I've met people from all over the world. You know, I learn from you. I learn from you every day. Every day. You know, even though I've been sober many years, I'm always still learning. I play Scrabble every day. And the reason I do that is because I'm starting to forget a lot of things and I'm not as quick as I was with my numbers. You know, so I'm like, oh man, dementia's coming. You know, so I'm always afraid of that. And one thing I didn't mention is that I stuttered as a kid. And now that I'm older, I'm starting to stutter, or my words don't come up quite like I'd like them to. So I'm like, shit, you're reverting back. You on the way out. I've been telling myself that for years and I'm still here. So I'm tired of telling myself those messages that are not conducive to making me have a happy day. I definitely got to get back to the dentist. Oh, I hate the dentist. I was hoping I would die before I had to go back to the dentist. But yes, I have to work on that. So these are the things I have to work on. And I'm not a perfect person. I don't intend to be. I'm always open. If somebody needs to talk, I'm an excellent listener. Well, I learned how to be that. I'm a social worker. Damn, I can listen. So what else can I say? But that I'm glad that you're all in my life. We all go through so much each day, staying sober. But what I intend to put in this day is some joy, some happiness, a little dancing, the sun is shining. Oh, I could turn the camera back on because I'm now finished. I have to look at my face. Okay. Yeah, see the sun is shining. Look, outside. Yeah, so I'm gonna get outside and I got a commitment today at 2, so I'll do that. Good food to eat. And what more can I ask for? I'm not drinking today and I'm not shooting no dope. I ain't hurt anybody, nobody hurt me. But shit, the day ain't over. My feelings get hurt a lot of times during the day, but that's okay because I guess what? I'm sensitive now. I have to laugh at that because some of the things that, they kind of blow me off, or sometimes I'll hear you talking and my eyes get tearful. I'm like, yeah, it's not so much what they're saying. You actually fucking care about them. I've learned to love you. I've learned to love you. So that's a big step. And that could never happen until I learned to love me first, So damn. I'm sorry, I'm looking at the clock. This is way too long. Malia, I'm so sorry. Oh, you know what? This is what I'm gonna do. Now, listen to this plan. This is a quick plan. Going forward, when I speak, I'm gonna stand up the next time. Like I'm gonna do this time. I'm gonna stand up and I'm gonna lean over. So nobody will never have to hear me talk for no 40 damn minutes. That shit is crazy. But anyway, I'm glad you all are here today. I'm glad you're part of my life. So Bert, Tanya, Malia, Gail, Jenny, Laura, Zanna, Nellie, Marsha, Nana, Tracy, Jenny, and the Riot. It always tells me if I get nervous, just picture y'all naked. So thank you. Thank you for listening. Bye for now.